Sani Bonani, and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show. The World Cup in South Africa is less than 100 days away, hence the Zulu greeting, and we here at the show wanted to get a little better acquainted with the teams that will be competing this summer. But before we get to the particulars of the program, I suppose I should introduce the other people sitting around this table. So in order of increasing facial hair, we have Albert.
Hello.
Daryl.
Hello.
And Josh.
And hello.
I think that's the right order, right?
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, so getting back to the World Cup, the way it works basically is there are 32 teams qualify, and they're divided into eight groups of four. Of those four teams, two will progress to the knockout round. And between now and kickoff of the World Cup, we're going to try to determine what teams are most likely to go through. And to do that, we've developed a very specific, very precise, and not at all random series of criteria.
I would call it scientific.
That's scientific as well.
Scientific set of criteria. Thank you, boys. So we'll go through, discuss each of them, and then I, being the host or dictator, whichever you prefer, I prefer dictator, will decide who gets the points. So this week, it's Group A, which is France, Uruguay, Mexico, and South Africa. And to start us off, I guess the first point will be best nickname. Daryl, what country are you representing, and what's their nickname?
Bonjour, I'm representing France.
Nice work.
And the French nickname is Le Bleu, which means the blues.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yep, that's the color of their jersey. It's that simple.
Josh, what color or what country are you representing, and what's their nickname?
I'm gonna go with Uruguay today, and they're La Celeste, and it's the Sky Blues. So that's once again their uniforms.
There you go. We have a pattern developing here. Albert, who are you?
Today I am the Mexican national team, mm-hmm. and their nickname is El Tri, which means the three, and it's in reference to the three colors of their flag, which are also represented on their uniforms.
All right, and I have South Africa, who are Bafana Bafana, or the boys, Wikipedia, and Daryl taught me that. And right now, I got to say that I'm the odds-on favorite, because all three of you are named after the colors of your team, and I at least have something creative.
Yeah, I think Bafana Bafana is a fantastic
name. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Originality wins rules the day.
It's also the most fun to say.
Yes. All right, so wow, South Africa out to an early lead, potential upset. In the making, I'm kind of surprised. So we'll move on to the second point, which is the best coach. Daryl, you want to start us off again?
Yeah, I can do. So the French coach is Raymond Domenech.
Okay, and you lose.
Let me make the case. It depends how you define best coach.
Okay.
So you mean worst?
Maybe worst, but I could make the case for Domenech as the most entertaining coach.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is a man who famously takes astrology into account when selecting his team. Doesn't trust Scorpios, and so if you're a Scorpio, you have less chance of making the squad.
How do you think Robert Pires feels about that?
Not good.
I feel like your argument is the Stephen Colbert rationalization of Bush's approval ratings, which is like, sure, 30% of people say he's doing a great job, but by contrast, doesn't mean that 30% of people don't not think he's doing a great job? Like, is that the approach you're going with here?
Well, in terms of approval ratings, Raymond Domenech are very, very, very low. I think a lot of the French fans are almost just waiting for him to lose his job.
Okay, so that's the French option there. What's the Uruguayan option, Josh?
Oscar Tabarez, and he's a fine coach and all, but there's nothing that distinguishes him from the rest of the pack, I'll be honest.
Does that mean you don't know much about him?
You had to go and call me out, didn't you?
All right, so that moves us on to Mexico. Mexican coach is?
Javier Aguirre, mm-hmm. and I think he's a dark horse in this because he coached Mexico previously when they were having troubles in qualification like they did this time, mm-hmm. not to jump ahead, and he led them in the 2002 World Cup, and they made it to the round of 16 where they lost to the United States, and I think he's done a good job since he's taken over from Sven-Goran Eriksson.
Yeah, I think that's the strongest point, is that he took over from Sven-Goran Eriksson, who was almost as much of a laughingstock as Raymond Domenech, maybe. I mean, that's a different competition for
a
later
dubious award.
I think people laughed when he was appointed because it was such a bizarre appointment. Like, you never put those two together, Sven mm-hmm. and Mexico. It doesn't make sense.
All right, so that leads us to the South African option, and that's Carlos Alberto Pereira. And I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised. South Africa may go up 2-0 here because Pereira, not only has he won the World Cup with Brazil in 1994, he's actually only one of two coaches to lead four different teams to the World Cup. He took Kuwait in 82, UAE in 90, Brazil in 94, and Saudi Arabia in 98, and now South Africa, not too bad.
You can't really argue with his resume, but mm-hmm. I would maybe say that as the only coach of the four who isn't of the same nationality as his team, mm-hmm. that maybe has to count against him.
I don't think it does.
I think it says the dictator. I mean, I think winning a World Cup puts you in a completely different level than these three coaches.
Plus, so. He managed the Metro Stars of the
well,
MLS.
That's
so.
Obviously
yeah, I don't know if that helps or hurts your argument.
I think it helps. So Pereira wins, South Africa up 2-0, and we move on to qualification. Albert, you want to go with that one since I feel like you've got some things to say?
Well, Mexico had what I would call a poor qualification. They made it, so it can't be too poor, I guess. But they ended up qualifying second out of CONCACAF. And the real story there is just the coaching carousel that ensued after the 2006 World Cup. Hugo Sanchez, a very famous Mexican player, lobbied for a long time to be the coach of Mexico. He was given the job and won under 50% of his games. So he was sacked in 2008, and then the Mexicans tried to make a huge splash, so they hired Sven-Goran Eriksson, who was sacked after they lost 3-1 to Honduras, which led them to hire coach Javier Aguirre, who kind of righted the ship, brought in some older players, and they kind of finished a lot stronger than they started, like I said, finishing second to the United States in CONCACAF. Mm-hmm. But there was a long stretch where people thought the Mexicans may not even qualify for this tournament.
Fair enough. And I believe that's a continuing trend with Uruguay as well, Josh?
Well, with Uruguay it is. They were having trouble. They ended up qualifying fifth in South America, which puts them in the playoff spot with CONCACAF, but there's a slight difference. Uruguay is not one of those teams that is assumed to be in the World Cup or assumed to win their division. So for them, I would say for them to make the World Cup, it's a success no matter where they make it.
Mm-hmm. Even though they had to sneak past Costa Rica, who are also probably not one of the world's strongest powers?
Even though they had to, I would say it's a better campaign than Mexico for relative-wise.
Fair enough. And speaking of sneaking past teams, at least Uruguay can do it legally, because I'm not sure France did.
Good adjective, yeah. Taylor.
there you go.
France's qualification for World Cup 2010 is already the stuff of legend.
Yeah.
But not in a good way.
I was going to say. Tread lightly, my friend.
So France finished second in their group behind Serbia, which meant a playoff against Ireland. And famously, in the second leg of that playoff, they won the game when Thierry Henry double handballed.
Yeah.
I think is a fair description, to cross the ball for William Gallas to score. It's a huge, huge controversy. Some say they shouldn't even be there, but they are.
Yeah, so they are. South Africa is also there, and they had a 100% unbeaten record throughout their qualification campaign.
Okay, Mr. Dictator, they also didn't have to play a game to get there.
Yes, the host nation does automatically qualify, meaning that they didn't actually have to do any sort of qualification. But
with all these points out there, Uruguay did the best of what any team could expect for them to do, as opposed to Mexico and France struggling very mightily.
Yeah, I think it does come down to the fact that Uruguay and France both had playoffs. Uruguay went through on a more legal means than maybe France. So
they scored a foot goal.
Yes. well said. So I say the points go to Uruguay. Any disagreeers? Everybody agree? So, all right, Uruguay on the board with 1 point. And we move on to the best attack. This is the team that overall has the best attacking options and the best strength going forward. Josh, since you just won the points, I'll let you start with Uruguay.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and say Uruguay does, and with Diego Forlan and Suarez up top. Forlan was the golden boot winner in Europe, which means pretty much you scored the most goals in Europe, which is an outstanding achievement for a forward. Mm-hmm. And then Suarez, who's just scoring goals by the handful at Ajax and is actually the captain at Ajax. With those two partnering up top, I think it's a pretty deadly, lethal combination.
All right.
Deadly and lethal.
Both at the same time.
Double deadly.
It's double.
But moving on, all right, Albert, what about Mexico? What about their attacking options?
Well, I think, like I was saying, when Aguirre took over as coach, he brought back Cuauhtémoc Blanco, and that seemed to spark the Mexican attack. Now, I'm going to ask you not to snicker as I say that. Yes, this is the 36 or 37-year-old Blanco. 37-year-old Blanco. But not only do they have him, they have Giovanni Dos Santos, an exciting young player who now plays for, is it Galatasaray, Taylor?
I believe it is, yes.
Galatasaray over in Turkey. They have Carlos Vela from Arsenal, and they have Andres Guardado, who plies his trade in Spain for Deportivo La Coruña. So I think they have a lot of exciting options going forward. They play with a little bit of flair, and I think that they definitely have a case for being the best attacking group in this group.
Speaking of exciting attacking options, South Africa has Benny McCarthy. Are you out there in Radioland excited about Benny McCarthy? Probably not. So that's why maybe South Africa might not win this one. They also have Steven Pienaar, who plays for Everton. He's playing very well this season. He's doing a lot with them. But I do think that overall they don't have maybe the names that people are familiar with. That may be because a lot of their players, I think, are going to be from their domestic league in South Africa. So I can't really in good conscience award points to South Africa on this one.
I think Pienaar will be exciting to watch, though. I
mean, definitely.
A player to watch.
Oh, definitely.
But do you think Steven Pienaar would even suit up if he were French?
I think it's possible.
But would he be in your preview of the French attacking options, Daryl?
Well, okay, that leads me into it nicely, which is that France has a fantastic attack on paper. They've got guys like Thierry Henry, Nicolas Anelka, Johan Gourcuff, Frank Ribery, and many, many more.
I mean, Sami Nasri with his goal this past week in Champions League.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that was fantastic. Sort of slalom through the defenders.
Yeah.
But the problem is that they don't seem to be able to get all these players to sort of click together into a potent attack. And some French fans feel that it's because Domenech plays with two defensive midfielders and only one striker. So they can never pair two strikers up front.
It's kind of like fighting with one hand tied behind your back almost.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like they're not allowed to press forward maybe the way they should be. Right?
Yeah, and possibly Thierry Henry should be forced to play with one hand tied behind
his
back.
Okay, so what do we say? I'm actually going to sorry to all you South African supporters out there, but I'm going to take them out of the running on this one simply because in their last 14 matches, they've only won three, and that would be against Zimbabwe, Swaziland, and Madagascar, and they're currently ranked 81st in the world. So I don't think I can, in good conscience, again, have them in this one. So it's down to the three of you. Debate.
I think it's France. I think that the best attacking group in this, if they can somehow gel, is going to be France. They have world-class players all over their offense, so if they find a way to play together even for a little bit, maybe someone finds a way to pull the strings for them. I don't think Uruguay and Mexico really even stand a chance offensively.
Yeah, on paper it's France, but they haven't, like Daryl's mentioned, they haven't gelled. And I just think when you have a golden boot winner on your side, you may have a chance to compete with anyone in the world for attacking options.
All right, so let's go around the room. I'll go with Uruguay. Why not? Best attacking option, Uruguay. Albert, what about you?
I say France, actually.
Josh?
I think we're going to have a tie. Uruguay.
Yeah, I say France for the depth they've got.
All right.
Can you award half an arrow to each?
I can award 0.5 points. That's fine.
Okay.
There you go. okay. Well, then let's move on then to the fifth point, which would be the best defensive options. Josh, you want to get us going?
Well, I was looking over Uruguay. Their captain is the central defender. He plays at Fenerbahce. They allowed 20 goals in qualifying, which put them pretty much right dead in the middle of the pack for South America. So their defense isn't anything special, but it's definitely not bad.
Okay. Albert, Mexico?
Yeah, I think one of the most recognized players in Mexico is Rafa Marquez, who plays for Barcelona in Spain. Mm-hmm. And when he's healthy, I really think he might be the heart and soul of the Mexican national team. You know, he is their captain, but I think they play better when he's out there. He's a strong center back, and he really helps them out. And then also another pretty well-known Mexican player is their goalkeeper, Guillermo Ochoa, who's kind of come on, and he plays for Club America in Mexico. A lot, he's recognizable because of his hair. It kind of flops all around, but he's also quite a good goalkeeper in spite of his hair, or because of it. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with those two guys back there, they definitely have a certain pedigree, and I think they defend pretty well overall as a unit.
Gotcha. Daryl, what about France?
France is sort of a mixed bag at the back. They've got a strong goalkeeper. Hugo Lloris seems to have really settled into the position. They've got William Gallas, central defence. Patrice Evra at left back. I know as a Man United fan, Taylor, you'll be liking him. I'd say he's one of the best left backs in the world.
I would actually say he is the best left back in the world. I mean, that's obviously biased, but yeah, I'm going to say that.
Bakary Sagna from Arsenal seems to have sewn up the right back spot. Mm-hmm. But then the problem is they don't seem to know who partners Gallas in the centre.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been it's almost like a revolving door of who's going to play alongside him. So I don't know. If they make a decision and stick with one guy, maybe they have a solid defense. If not, then it could be a little confusing.
Gotcha. Well, I'm going to make the case for South Africa now because I like the fact that while I did say that a lot of their talent is coming from the domestic league, like you look at all three of their goalkeepers are, but if you look at their back four, you have Aaron Mackoena, who plays for Portsmouth in the English Premier League. You have
the Axe.
There you go. You have players from Spain, from Germany, from the from the Israeli league. I know we all think of that as one of the top leagues in Europe. So they do have a fair amount of talent. As I said, they didn't let in any goals in qualifying. Remember that. So that counts as well. And maybe lastly is that if you look at their performance in last summer's Confederations Cup, they didn't perform that great, obviously, but it wasn't because of the goals let in. They didn't let in any goals against Iraq, no goals against New Zealand, only one goal against Brazil, and two goals against Spain. I mean, that's not that bad in the grand scheme of things against, you know, the team that won the overall tournament and the team that, you know, won the
European Championship.
Thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, that's not that bad. I'm making a case here. South Africa.
Okay.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right, but let's put it to a vote here. So, Dara, I'll let you start.
I would go with France again, just because I feel like having the best left back in the world and having someone like Galas, I think that's maybe with the exception of Marquez, that's a superior quality of player to everybody else.
Yeah, fair enough. Josh?
While I really like Ochoa as a goalie, I think I'd have to lean France's way too, because I just think they have more depth, and I think their defense can actually create more attacking, which could be helpful too with Evra.
Albert?
Yeah, I mean, again, it comes down to, and this is maybe not the best thing in the world, it comes down to the names that I recognize, and the names that I recognize as quality soccer players. And I think France has more quality soccer players in the back than the other nations that we're talking about. So,
yep, I agree. 4-0 to France. So France gets the check mark there. And before we continue, I did just want to say that you're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show here on WRAR 97.3. And we're discussing Group A of this summer's World Cup. And we're breaking it down by 9 different criteria to see which two teams are going to advance to the knockout round. We're through 5, and we're on to the 6th, which is the team's overall football history. Daryl, you want to start us off with that one?
Yeah, France won the World Cup as recently as 1998 when they hosted. They won the European Championship 2000, 2 years later, which is a rare feat to hold both titles at once. They also won the Euros back in 1984 with Michel Platini. And they made the final of the most recent World Cup in 2006. That's not a bad pedigree.
No, not too bad there. Can Uruguay challenge that one, Josh?
I'd say, well, that's very impressive. Uruguay has, first of all, won 2 World Cups. So that's twice as many.
Albeit in 1930 and 1950.
Yes,
but
they
go ahead.
They were a while back, so that is kind of a downfall. But they've also won 14 Copa Americas. That's 14 of the South American championships.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah. So
yeah,
and I know the Euros don't play as often as Copa America, but 14 is tied for the record for South American championships. So I think putting those two together, you got a lot of work with.
All right, so impressive pedigrees from France and Uruguay. Albert, can Mexico continue that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can. They've qualified for 14 World Cups overall, which is the most out of any nation from CONCACAF, and I think it stacks up well against almost any nation in the world. Where you run into problems with their history is that their best ever World Cup finish was both times they hosted the tournament in 1970 and 1986, and they reached the quarterfinals. And past that, you know, winning the Gold Cup, which is the CONCACAF championship, they've won that a number of times, along with the U.S., especially in recent history. But
yeah, they basically pass it back and forth.
Yeah, right? It's kind of one of those things. It's a two-horse race, and so it's impressive that you win it, but perhaps almost through no fault of their own, and that they play in the confederation that they do, winning that championship's not as impressive as winning a European championship or even a Copa America.
Well, I'm a history dork, so that's where I'm going to take this one. Because in South Africa, in 1948, the Afrikaner National Party took power. That was the apartheid regime, or the beginning of the apartheid regime. And it was basically got to the point where in 1961, South Africa was banned for violating the non-discriminatory regulations of FIFA. That was because they had 2 national teams, 1 white, not 1 non-white. And so they were pretty much banned until 1991 with the fall of apartheid. And they actually won their first game in 1992 as a unified nation. So I think that's a fair achievement there, but more so since then, they won the African Cup of Nations in 1996, and they've been to 2 World Cups, this one being their 3rd. I think that's a fairly impressive footballing achievement, considering it's only been, 18 years? 3 World Cups? 1 African Nations Cup? Come on.
It really is, actually, for a nation that's that young as the stable national team,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't quite stack up to a couple of the other ones out there.
Yeah, that might be a fair argument.
I think that's probably the best way to describe that. Take nothing away from South Africa's accomplishments mm-hmm. and the infancy of its, you know, newfound footballing prowess. But I think you got to look elsewhere, maybe.
All right, fair enough. So if we're putting it to a vote, I'll give it to France, as much as it pains me. So 1 vote for France. Albert?
I'm actually going to say Uruguay.
Uruguay, all right.
I would say Uruguay with the international tournaments.
Daryl?
I'm a little bit torn between France and Uruguay. My problem with Uruguay is that a lot of it's not just history, but ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
Like way back in 1350, whereas France's achievements are more recent. So I guess because Josh said Uruguay, I'm going to say France.
All right, so that's 2-2.
Stare down.
And although I am a history buff, I will say that in this case, forget history. France wins. Check for France. All right, so that's through 6. We move on to number 7. Obviously, the most important when you think of any World Cup, and that's the celebrity spokesperson. Who is the most famous face that's going with your team? Albert, who you got?
I don't know. I want to say this. I don't know if it's the most famous face in Mexico, but it's certainly a face I enjoy seeing.
Why do I feel like I know where you're going with this?
This is Selma Hayek. I think that anytime she's endorsing a product, if that product's a soccer team, hey, let's go.
I wish you listeners could see the way Albert is accidentally gesturing when he's describing Selma Hayek. It's not exactly appropriate, and thus it's good for radio, I suppose. Albert, anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
That's pretty much all I got. I
All right. So Selma Hayek from Mexico. What about Uruguay?
All right, Uruguay is known for a lot of things. What I'm going to go with is Jorge Drexler.
Mm-hmm.
He won an Oscar back for Motorcycle Diaries. He had the song that won the Oscar.
Fantastic.
And the best part about it was his acceptance speech, which he sung a cappella his song for the acceptance speech.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
at no point in history has singing a cappella been a good idea, so you're automatically disqualified. Darrow, who you got?
Oh, so obviously there are a lot of famous French people to choose from.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to go outside the box a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone Marcel Marceau.
Okay.
The famous French mime.
Disqualification.
Because he can't speak on behalf of the team, can he?
But he speaks with his hands. He's a mime. It's his job.
I'm about to disqualify you from this overall broadcast. All right, well, I win because I have Nelson Mandela. Refute me. You can't. Nelson Mandela wins. All right. So number 8.
It's a rough day for Mexico. None of these categories were geared towards the strengths of Mexico.
Okay, well, maybe they can step it up here with the best national anthem, because that's our next point. So here's the Mexican national anthem. All right, and here's the Uruguayan national anthem. All right, and now we have the national anthem of South Africa. Okay, and lastly, the national anthem of France. Okay, so there are the four national anthems of the four respective countries, and I'll open it up for debate. Anybody want to take this one?
Yeah, well, I'd start off by saying that this is important football-wise because the national anthems are played before each match.
Right.
So it sets the tone.
Right, yep. And if you're listening to the South African one, then does it set the tone that you're going to take a nap during the match?
Yeah, it's a little slow, isn't it?
It was a little slow. All right, so maybe South Africa, not so much, but what about the other three?
I mean, I personally really enjoy the French one. I think it's very energetic. It's the one that I could find myself enjoying singing along to.
All right.
So
I could enjoy watching Bambi have trouble walking with the Uruguayan national anthem. That's what that was reminiscent of for me. Maybe another one where you don't quite want that right before your country goes out to play in a World Cup. Could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think the dark horse in this one might be the Mexican national anthem. It has a very regal tone to it, and you know that I think it sounds good. But if I'm going to be honest with myself, I really enjoy the French national anthem. The amount of times I've heard it before, I like it a lot, so
I think the French one's the only one to feature in the film Casablanca, and for that reason, it should win.
All right, well, I'll give it to you, and that's a clean sweep for France, I believe, which moves us on to our 9th and final category, maybe the most hotly debated. It's the best player ever from the respective country. So, Albert, I'll let you start off. Who is the best Mexican player of all time?
Okay, I think the most notable one for me is Hugo Sanchez, who was their coach and didn't have the best run at doing that, but he was an incredible goal scorer in his heyday in the 80s and early 90s. He had a long career with Real Madrid, and I think it's worth noting that not a ton of Mexican players go and play abroad. I think that's in part because of the strength of the Mexican league, but also because maybe it's a little more difficult for them to go play in Europe, and he just had a fantastic career with Real Madrid, and he was great for the Mexican national team. I think he was probably the best player ever.
I love his overhead kicks.
Yeah.
Yes.
See some fantastic Sanchez goals.
All right. What about you, Josh? Who's the best Uruguayan of all time?
All right. Well, if you're a frequent listener to the show, you may have heard this name before. I'm going to go with Jose Nzazi. He was captain of the Uruguayan team back in the mid-1920s to the mid-1930s. He won the World Cup in 1930 with Uruguay and then the Olympics twice and then also Copa America, meaning every big tournament he played in at some point, he won. So I think it's pretty impressive.
All right, yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. For me, when I look at it, the best or maybe the most famous South African footballer is Stephen Kalamazoo Makone. I may have butchered that pronunciation. I apologize if I did. He was the first black South African to play professional football in Europe. He never played for the South African national team due to the 3 decades of apartheid and forced isolation. But I just really like this quote about him, and so that's what I'm going to go with. And it's, if Pele of Brazil is the Rolls Royce of soccer players, Stanley Matthews of England is the Mercedes-Benz, and Alfredo Di Stefano of Argentina and Spain is the Cadillac, then Kala of South Africa, lithe and lean, is surely the Maserati.
That's not bad. That is not bad.
So that's it for me. But Daryl, I think yours, I feel like you may have struggled with this one. You got a couple people to choose from in France.
Pretty much when you're talking best French player of all time, mm-hmm. The two big ones are Michel Platini mm-hmm. and Zinedine Zidane. Two great, great attacking players. I think after weighing the two up, I'm going to come down with Zinedine Zidane. Because he won the World Cup in 98, something Platini never managed to do, and then followed it up with the European Championship in 2000. And he was just a joy to watch. I think there aren't many better things in football than seeing Zidane do his 360-degree spin thing.
He's so smooth. There's the elegance when he played that was unbelievable.
All right, so I feel like we've got a consensus here, but I'll start it off. I'm going to go with Zizou. I think that's a pretty logical choice for the best player. What about you, Al?
It has to be Zidane.
Josh?
No question, Zidane.
All right, and Daryl?
Zidane.
Fair enough. All right, so let me tally. Wow.
Yep.
Surprising results here. Based on our foolproof scientific system, we have France with 4.5 points going through in first place, and we have South Africa in second place going through with 3 points, which is good because then they won't be the first host nation ever to not go to the knockout round. So I'm okay with that. So that's our Group A. And then so next week we'll be doing Group B, which is Nigeria, South Korea, Greece, and Argentina. Maybe on paper straightforward, maybe not so much, depending on our scientific system. But until then, say goodbye, Albert.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Josh.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Daryl.
Au revoir.
And goodbye for me. Wow, fancy. All right, well, goodbye for me, and we'll see y'all next week.